And I'll go ahead and start us off.
Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 97 of Little Things for Bonsai People. We're nearing the end of 2024. We're going into fall, finally. Everything's looking beautiful. Fall color everywhere. In other parts of the country, in Louisiana, just a little bit, but everything's doing pretty well. Today, I am joined by two very special guests. Returning, we have Guy Guidry. How's it going, Guy?
I'm fine, thank you.
Awesome. Guy is here to talk some bonsai history with us yet again. And then also we have another old bonsai head on the podcast returning as well. We have Robert Pressler. How's it going, Robert?
Pretty good. I'm starting to resemble that old comment.
I was like, that was an undercut. It's okay.
I'm just referring to experience. I'm not trying to call you guys out. But you guys have been in it for a while.
Yeah, that's true. A couple of weeks ago, somebody told me that I'm now one of the bonsai elders here in California, and that just kind of like threw me for a loop for a week.
Well,
you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the bonsai elders are, you know, like John Naka and Ben Oki and those guys.
Yeah, but aren't they all dead?
Yeah, they are. And you know, the truth of the matter is that I am actually one of the, you know, older, longest practicing bonsai people still around in Southern California. And it's like, whoa.
Not to be crass, however, how old are you?
66.
Oh, shut up. You're older than me. Wow. You look so young.
Hey, all that drugs and booze in my younger days.
Hey, I'm closer to 65 than I am to 64. So there you have it.
Well, you'll be dealing with Medicare then. That was the first time I ever felt old.
At least we have Medicare.
I could tell we're gonna have a lot of fun on this one. But before we get too much further, we need to express what the topic today is going to be. I can tell you guys are ready to go. So we're going to be talking to Guy and Robert about the history of one of the most legendary bonsai trees in North America of all time, about Twister. We're going to start off with Guy's history with collecting and styling the tree and its own little, you know, there might be little nuances of things that happened while he had the tree in his possession, while it was at his nursery. And then eventually it was bought and then sold. And Robert comes into the story later on, of course, but we're trying to track down where Twister is now so that we can dissolve all the rumors about this tree. There's a lot of people that think it's either deceased or it was sold on the black market, or it was, you know, like something weird happened, like it was planted back in the... There's all these weird rumors about this tree, but we want to see if we can have this kind of like Bigfoot, kind of elusive Bigfoot story about Twister, because it really is a big tree too. But before we get too far into that, we need to mention that our podcast is sponsored by our patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. You can go over there and become a bonsai best bud and hang out with all of the amazing bonsai people in the Discord chat. And we have a special featured bonsai best bud today. I'm going to go ahead and shout it out. Byron Myrick Bonsai Pottery. Thank you, Byron Myrick, for sponsoring our show. Of course, we love your pottery. And I mean, if you guys haven't seen Byron's work, I would highly suggest going to check it out. Then we have our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. John over at Joshua Roth has been backing the show for quite some time now. And of course, he will be contributing to our Little Things Bonsai Education Fund as well. And if you guys are not aware of that, and you haven't heard us on the previous episodes, you can shoot me an email, evan@underhillbonsai.com. Tell me what your bonsai goals and your bonsai dreams are and where you want to go with bonsai, because we are giving $200 in classes, lectures, and workshops worth to whoever is nominated for this sponsorship, and we will pay for you to go to your local bonsai professional or nursery or what have you, a convention, and take bonsai classes with that fund. And Joshua Roth is giving out $200 worth of bonsai tools as well with that sponsorship. It's very special. We will be announcing the winner of that scholarship on episode 100. We're on 97, so y'all still have time to submit. And then also, we can't go much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes us sound smart, cleans up the audio, makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com and you can contact him about starting your own podcast show or doing some audio engineering with him. He is a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee. He's an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script. I say it every single time. So now that with that out of the way, where do you want to start? Where do we start? Do we start talking about Twister, the date when you collected it, guy? What? How do you feel?
Excuse me. Wow. I guess we should start from the very beginning. It's a long story, so I'll try to make it short and sweet. We and all my buddies, the Bonsai Society of New Orleans, along with people, clubs from California and all around the world, were back in the late 80s and early 90s collecting mainly bald cypress out in Destrehan, a swamp right basically across from the Moisan Airport. And so we'd been out there. And anyway, I went out one time. I was going to meet a friend of mine who didn't show. So I was by myself. And there was always a tree that intrigued me. It was way too big for me to collect. However, I just wanted to go out and see it for inspiration. And so I went out, and there was Twister. And the unique thing about Twister was he twisted. But he was too big. And the one thing that he had in his favor was he was right next to the railroad tracks, which is the only means to get to any road besides going through the swamp, perhaps a half a mile to a mile, which is very difficult with the tree. So I analyzed Twister. Do y'all want me to keep going on, or what do you think?
Oh, keep going. Keep going.
Okay. Well, this is how it was, because almost every tree has a pretty good story behind it. Well, most good trees, I think, do. And even my crappy ones have their own stories, but there was Twister, and it was beautiful. It was probably around 40 feet tall, going right next to the swamp, basically in sphagnum moss, something you could saw right through. But Twister's problem was it was like 4 feet wide because it had two skinny flares, flutes in the root system that for years had made me pass it over. And after I had been seasoned a little more, and more experience with the bald cypress, I went out with the intentions to cut off those flares and then just dig up what was left. It was successful, the dig, and I had to like roll this 250-pound tree soaking wet out of the swamp up the railroad tracks. And here comes a train, the engine plane. And he stopped. It was like, I always panicked. Anytime we saw trains coming by, we'd always kind of lay low, wouldn't move. And just felt like we were doing something illegal, which we weren't. We were saving these trees from the beavers anyway. But this train stops. There's an engine. And he said, "Hey, man, you need a lift?" I said, "Wait." He said, "I've been watching you and your friends for years out here. We've been watching. I wonder what the hell y'all are doing." He said, "I finally figured it out because I saw something about you in a big bald cypress." And so he said, "You want a lift?" He got down and he helped me put the tree on the steps. And he drove me about a quarter of a mile down to Swamp Road where my truck was parked, helped me put it in the back of my truck. And we bid farewell. How do you like that shit?
That's awesome, dude.
That is the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Do you remember what year this was, guy?
Well, I was just looking at the magazine cover, International Bone, Bill Balavance's, where he put Twister on the cover the year after, or the same year of his first international bonsai convention, All-American Bonsai Convention. In Rochester.
Let me see when that was.
And that was in 2009.
Okay, that's right.
And yep. So for Twister to be on the cover of that magazine in 2009, I had to have had at least 5 or 6 years from the time it was collected to that point, is what I think. That's all I could figure.
And that's how fast the tree was developed. You feel like it was about 5.
Yeah, some trees want to be a bonsai and some fight you. That was just one that cooperated the whole way. And hopefully is still continuing to do so. But Twisters...
Let me ask you a question. Did I hear you right when you said 40 feet, like 4-0?
Robert, it's between 35 and 40 feet tall, yes.
Curious as to how you reduced the height of it and made it still look so natural.
Okay, well, if you... But next time you have if you ever look it up, you can get a picture and you can see the fluting, the spiraling fluting bass. And if you look at those flutes, where those two lines converge, if you took it, it was about 4.5 feet up. And I just cut the whole tree off at 4.5 feet.
So, okay, for reference. I'm going to post this picture on Instagram. So if you guys go over to, well, this is for the listeners. I'm going to show you the picture, Robert. But if you guys go over to Instagram and you look up Little Things for Boneside People on Instagram and go to like the first photo, it's going to say episode 97, The Elusive Twister. Robert, here's the photo that Guy has supplied me. Can you see that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
See and, how unimpressive that is?
Yes. But it's very impressive because it had two flutes that went out, one in the back and one on the side over here on the left that went out another foot, which made it like undoable. But when I cut those flutes off,
right,
they went into the spiral of the tree. And it was just one of those things. Yeah. I mean, I enhanced it a little bit in the front. Hey, this is a good example. You see, if you're looking at the picture, the first picture of tree after it was initially styled, wired, you'll notice that there's no gin and they have charrette, but there's not a chunk of dead wood sticking out of the left side, a third of the way up. You see what I'm saying? Show them the picture of Twister on the magazine cover, and you'll see that that doesn't exist. Yeah. In that picture. And I'll explain why. So, Robert, so you see that piece of deadwood in there? In between the first branch on the left and the next branch above? That's not Twister. So it had to have been longer than 5 years before the convention, because this is what I'm thinking. At some point, Twister, I got termites in Twister, and there was a rotten spot right where that piece of wood is. And I had a Rocky Mountain juniper stag, a beautiful piece of wood, which is part of Twister now, and I jammed it in this hole. And that was in the springtime of whatever year it was. But by that fall, that sucker had been engulfed by woundwood. The vascular system ate it up and it was stuck in there forever. So it became the major feature of the tree. And so for me not to be, I don't want to say why, what I was thinking, but I was pissed off. For some reason, that was a bad moment for me. And that tree, he's shooting the bird at you. He says, fuck you, is what that
you see. It actually, if you guys, for our listeners, you go over to our Instagram post, I'm gonna post it in order. You could see the collected stump, and then you'll see how it was carved. And then if you look right where Guy's talking about, above that first branch, there's a curled piece of deadwood.
Right.
Literally looks like it's coming up, and it has like a hand. And yeah, it does look like it's shooting the bird. But yeah, this is how Guy feels.
I don't feel that way anymore.
This is how he used to feel back in, so I was doing the math. It should have been like 2005 you would have collected Twister, roughly.
Maybe. I don't know. Y2K, it seems. No, because I was living. No, that was before, because I lived in Flower States where Twister was in a mortar tub, a big giant mortar tub. But no, that was before. Oh, shit. I don't know. I'll have to be more thorough next time we talk. And I'll try
once
to be.
Once you hit 60, the years kind of go away from you. All right.
Hey,
I remember shit. You know,
the older you get, the faster you get old.
Yep.
So that's okay. I'm sorry you're so old, but anyway, go on. So but,
I never knew that there was a piece of Rocky Mountain juniper in it. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And it just happened. It was just an emotion. That's all it was. And it didn't last for long, but then it was stuck, and so I had to go with it. But now Twister's not saying shooting the bird. He's saying, hi, hello, I'm out here. Hey, allegedly, Twister still lives, apparently. I don't know. I've heard rumors. Some say he was sold on a black market. I don't know, whatever. Some say it's been dead.
Maybe I'll kind of interject a minute here. He was definitely sold, but not on the black market. The person you sold it to had to sell off his collection due to circumstances beyond his control. And it was sold to a private collector in Los Angeles who's really, really private. And it's a Chinese,
a true aficionado. Yes.
Yeah, a Chinese businessman that has apparently an insane collection of trees. And Twister happens to be one of them. But as far as I know, it's still alive and well. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. And I do know that this guy really takes care of his collection. So,
yeah, that's what I heard.
I would assume still really good shape.
I hope. I keep my fingers crossed, but I have faith of, because I actually got to read an email of another friend of mine, a big collector of bonsai trees, had one of the finest collections of bonsai around. He still does. He said one day to me, "Guy, wouldn't it be nice if we could reunite some of your trees? You made so many trees over the years, some of those trees." And so he actually, and Robert, you recall, he made an attempt to get in touch with
right,
the person that you actually liquidated some of the trees to. And so he said, "Look, I've had this tree for a couple years, and it's in a wooden box right now. And we bought a very, very expensive Japanese pot. I think you told me this part of the story, and it's never been put in the pot." So he says, "I want to have the tree in the pot in my collection at least for a year, and then maybe I'll consider selling it." But he did say it's not like what you sold it for. It's like crazy expensive. So there you have it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in a box because, it went from Louisiana to Los Angeles, which, you know, for anything, tree, person, whatever, that's a big difference.
Sure.
You know, that takes a lot of acclimation to get used to that. And it was kind of, it was a little bit weak. And I thought that it would be better to, like, put it in a box for a little while to kind of let it rejuvenate stuff. I'm not sure how long it had been since it was transplanted from the time before you sold it. And I know that the person you sold it to didn't transplant it at all. He had it for, I think, a couple of years by the time I put it in the box.
So you guys don't mind. I know you guys are kind of just talking about this tree, but what kind of tree are we talking about?
an amazing bald cypress.
Okay. I didn't know if we were still talking about cypress trees still. I didn't know if we were on something else.
Oh, yeah, no, okay.
No. We're talking about Twister.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
right.
It was a little off. You guys were talking in a different pretense. I was like, what?
Okay, I'm going to put this magazine down and I'll start talking straight here. Okay. Back to the subject here.
Yeah.
No, so we got all the way to there to then, so what happened was that the picture that Twister went to the international exhibition, Bill Balavanis's first show, and it didn't win any awards or anything. However, the next magazine, I don't know if it's the next one or the following year, Bill graciously, he liked the tree too, put Twister on the cover of his magazine, International Bonsai. And then it was a year after that, or shortly after that, Twister sold with several of the other trees, and that was the last time I saw him.
Yeah, I think that's actually what precipitated selling it, was it being on the magazine cover.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, that's where he saw it and said, "I want this tree." And this was, you know, a person that was very wealthy, and like a lot of wealthy people in Los Angeles, when they decide they want something, they do everything they can to get it. And I guess he made you an offer that you couldn't refuse, and he got it.
Yep. We did talk about the pricing on all the other trees in the past, but I know for a little while, and so for reference for our listeners, so this is kind of tracking from roughly about the year 2000 to 2004-ish when it was collected, up to the point when
I think around 1997 or 98, if I could be realistic. Earlier.
Okay, so Guy, you told us it took about 5 years to develop. This is where
I don't remember, because think about it. It had to get infested by termites,
yep,
have a rotten spot for me to shove that big piece of wood in there, okay, for it to heal over, excuse me, and actually go to the exhibition.
Yep. Okay. So all we're right. just we're stretching this out. Okay. So timeline. This is why we're doing this. 97 roughly collection. Styling, going through the whole thing with the rotting point, shoving the Rocky Mountain Juniper in there. And then after that, you submitted it to the first national bonsai exhibition with Bill Balbanis. It went in 2009. And then Bill put it on its own special spot because it was so big. It is actually the picture
correct,
of it here.
Yes.
As the bamboo mat. You'll see it on the picture on Instagram. That has the, it was pretty much in the front. It was like a welcome tree. It was so big. And then from there, because you told me that what this is part of the thing too, you had a hackberry that you said it was one of your first workshop trees with John Naka that was there as well.
And it sold also along with Twister.
Yeah. And so
Robert has said,
what was that?
To the same person.
Yep.
Yes, to the same person.
I didn't know that. Okay, so now we're going to this point where Twister ended up on the magazine cover. So it's International Bonsai 2009, issue number 4, Twisted Trunk Bonsai is the name of the actual cover. It's really funny. The price on the magazine cover was $9.50, which that's pretty high still for a magazine. But
it was a good magazine.
Yeah, it's a great magazine.
They feature good trees.
I don't know if Bill still publishes that magazine or not. I need to check and see. But
I think not. I think just a couple of years ago, he stopped publishing a physical.
Yeah, it's all online now.
Yeah.
I think Bonsai Focus is like one of the last actual bonsai publication magazines ongoing that you can get. And International Probably. Was one of the other, was like one of the only other ones within the States that people were talking about other than Bonsai Today.
There's a couple more in Europe.
There's a Spanish one that's really popular. I remember whenever I was picking through, Michael Hagedorn had a really expansive bonsai magazine collection I was picking through, and there was a lot of French and Spanish magazines he had.
The German one.
Yep. Yep. The German one's awesome, by the way. I have a few of those. Yeah. But yeah, so we went from International magazine cover and then the potential buyer of Twisters saw it, and then he was like, I need that tree. And then for a while, I remember that Twister had a record of being the most expensive bonsai in the United States being purchased. Am I correct on that? Because I've heard a lot of different renditions of this story.
I think at the time, I don't know,
it's pretty possible. It's certainly possible. That's for sure.
It was the first quarter of that.
Up to that point.
Yeah, because now it's off the roof. You know the prices.
I know a Bjorn home tree went for a pretty exorbitant amount to a private collector recently. But before that, Twister back in 2009, that was a pretty big purchase. And you mentioned the numbers in our previous episode where I just talked to you exclusively, Guy, about your history. And I remember the whole conversation about we were ballparking at like, you know, 30, 40 grand just for Twister alone.
There was
$45,000. Yeah.
Robert, that's correct, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Hey, do you remember what the Cascade Hackberry went for?
No, and
I think it was 12.
Sure. That you sold it for, you mean?
Yes, that I sold it for.
Yeah. I don't know what he actually paid for that. Whatever it was, he got it cheap, because that was a pretty freaking amazing tree as well.
Have you seen that tree?
Twister's in a category of its own.
Right, but have you seen that Cascade?
Not in the last few years, no.
Ugh.
So it's still around, too.
Well, it was a very special. This is one of my first three trees. Yep. I have a very vivid, cool recollection. So I'm in my first workshop that I ever took.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah. And
I remember I forget why. We were doing something with the Cascade, and a little branch broke. And I planted that branch along with several others. I made cuttings out of it. And I just grew them because it was a cool little tree, you know? And I was like, this would be nice to have, you know.
You sent me a perfect replica of that tree.
Right. One of those cuttings was this Cascading one. And you and I talked one day. And you had mentioned, I knew it came from your tree, but I didn't know it was one of your first trees. And
yes,
we were talking,
right.
And you mentioned to me that was one of your first bonsai.
Yeah, that was from 1984.
I got 1984, yeah.
Yeah, I got something for you. And I sent you that cutting, which, yeah, it was like a little cascade that like was the miniature version of
it was identical. And when I got that package in the mail, I was just so excited because when I saw who it came from, I knew what was in that box. And it was just a delight, dude. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And it's still like I watered it.
You know, that's one of the cool things about this that, you know, that's awesome. You know, it's like it's little things like that is what makes this hobby, passion, vocation, whatever you want to call
addiction,
it,
addiction, compulsion.
Is it, yeah, all of that, you know, but it's one of the it's things like that that make this so special and that add to the stories of the tree.
Yep.
I mean, you know,
that's right.
When I first stuck it in the cutting mix, it was just a cutting from a really cool tree. I had no idea it was from Guy Goodry's, you know, one of his first bonsais. And I had no idea that a couple years later it would start to like almost duplicate the tree it came from in miniature.
It really is so exactly the same tree. Oh, it's so
And it was so cool when you told me that, you know, that was your first tree. And I was like, hey, I can send you a piece of it. You know, you can't have the tree back.
You gave it to me. You gave that to me. Hey, look, so in that workshop with John Naka came and he looked at my tree. It wasn't a cascade at the time. It was more upright, slanting. And he's, difficult tree. And he's, I'll be back. He's on the other side of the room. And he stood up working intently on somebody else's tree. And he stands up and he says, I got it. And he ran back to me. He turned my tree sideways, sketched out real quick. And by the end of the day, by the end of the workshop, I left with that exact sketch.
That sounds exactly 100% like a John Naka workshop.
Yep.
He was amazing that way. I used to have a elm tree that I had for probably 12 years that I brought to a workshop with him. And he, you know, was going around the room. He came up to me and he looked at my tree and he said, this is the back, right? I said, no, this is the front. He said, no, this is the back. And he just changed the angle by like a half inch and said, this one. And you know, I had the tree for 12 years. I looked at it 1,000 times. Never, ever saw it. But instantly he saw that. He sketched it out and boom, there it was.
I've heard him say to so many people, including myself, oh, you've got good back. He said the back always becomes a front. He was real gracious and said, that's a good front, but now it looks like this might be the front, and the way he would do it. So diplomatically done, you know, he was cool. I love that man.
He was an amazing guy, but taking a workshop with John was always an amazing thing. Now, what used to blow me away was his sketches.
Yeah, I wish I still had it.
I know. I wish I still had some of the sketches I got from him. At one time, I had a bunch of them, and I sold them all on the bonsai auctions.
I had the sketch of that cascade in John Naka Techniques one book for a long time, and where he had signed it for me and everything. But at some point, I read that book maybe 100 times, and I could recite any page. I could tell you what article, what was on each page. So I gave it. I gave it to a friend who just got into bonsai, unknowing I gave him my sketch too, and he was out of town.
Oh, it was inside.
It was folded inside the book.
Your original.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, the sketch.
I thought, I was like, the sketch is not in Bonsai Techniques. I would have seen that.
Oh, you're fact checking me. I see that book again.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. It's not in this book.
Evan's trying to go work for NBC News.
I know that John Naka did a sketchbook, like an actual book that included all of his sketches that he had drawn. And I'm wondering if it's in that book.
It was just my sketch. It was just one from a workshop.
He would do that. He would do workshops. And one of the things he would do is, you know, he didn't do it with every tree, but he did it with most of them. He would make a sketch of the way he envisioned that tree in the future.
Right.
And if you followed his directions, they pretty much always came out that way.
It was a darn good roadmap. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it wasn't the tree you had. It was the foundation of the tree you had and what he envisioned it looking like in the future. And if you listened to what he had to say, you really could achieve that.
Dude, I made that tree look exactly like his sketch. What I'm telling you, I followed it like a roadmap. Yep, every branch.
Yeah, that sketchbook of his, he actually didn't publish it. I think it was Cheryl Manning that put it all together. Mm. And it's not all of his sketches, because literally there are thousands of them.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't possibly.
They got to be
every time John did a workshop, well, he would make the sketch and give it to whoever owned the tree.
Yeah, that's right.
He didn't keep them himself.
Hey, people didn't even care about the tree. They just wanted his sketch.
Yeah, a lot of it, I can tell you right now, a lot of the trees that, you know, went to his workshops never really got worked on anymore, because unfortunately, you know, a lot of people will, you know, bring a tree to a workshop and then it sits for a couple of years and then, you know, it has to be restyled.
And then they bring it back to the next workshop and they still have the same little tabs where he said, cut these branches off, and they do it over and over and over again. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, but, you know, he did catch of every tree that he was working on. So there are, you know, literally thousands of Naka sketches out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that book you're talking about, I'm pretty sure it was Cheryl Manning or the Ragels that had published.
Yeah, Nina and Larry Ragel, I believe that's who it
was.
And
they, right.
They actually,
yeah,
they
Larry
published...
just recently passed.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. Sorry to hear. Nina and Larry.
They book called
That's right. Even Monkeys Fall Out of
Even
Trees.
Even Monkeys Fall Out of Trees.
Yep. That was a book poetry.
All of Naka-isms. It's a great book. I have it somewhere.
It was all like John's little sayings, you know, like you screw up and he'd like look at you and laugh and say, even monkeys fall out of trees.
That's right.
Or, you know, leave room for the birds to fly through. Your bonsai look like a tree, not a bonsai. You know, all of them are like in a little book, and it's pretty funny when you go through it.
Well, he used it in front of me. One time I was assisting him working on a tree. I forget where it was, but he put like three wraps of wire on a branch, and he kept bending it and bending it and bending it. He'd stand back and look at it. He said, a little more, and he bent it, and the whole branch broke off. And he says he had this branch in his head. He said, hey, even monkeys fall out of trees, and it was beautiful.
He was amazing like that. I'll forget one time it was the first time I was doing a big demonstration, and I spent like 10 or 15 minutes talking about how I made this top part, the apex of the tree, right? It was a pine tree I was working on,
right?
And you know, I talked about how I was going to do this and make the apex, wired it all up, started, and it just went crack, and I was mortified. I was like speechless. I my heart stopped. Everybody in the audience went, oh, and John just started laughing. And as soon as he started laughing, he just laughed. And the minute he started laughing, it just kind of made everything okay. And
it took the pressure off.
So, like I said, we're going to make a powerful tree. We're going to turn this into a gin, bring this branch up to the apex. But first there, it was just like, yeah, it was just him laughing, just made it possible to realize that it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, well,
the tree probably turned out better for it.
Yeah, well, there you have it. He made it clear to me that if you're trying to bend something or put something, and if it's such a constraint, you can't do it, it breaks. Well, you probably didn't need that branch because it was out of place and you couldn't get it in place. and so it works out, you know. You just have to, you know, go to plan B. Mm-hmm. So, what does this have to do with Twister, bro?
it's all bonsai.
Yeah. I'm playing.
it's all intrinsic to the bonsai thing.
Yeah,
you know.
it's all related, intertwined.
Yeah. And so for reference, so we can kind of get some more history. I remember you saying 1984 was the date.
1984 is when I collected that Cascade hackberry.
That hackberry. And then
you
had that hackberry. And I know somebody who has the first Nationals book, and I saw that hackberry.
Yeah, I forgot it was in there. Yeah.
And I was flipping through it. I was looking through I was over at Dawn Ketting's house, and she has all of the books just stacked up on her coffee table. And I was like, wait a second, I'm going through there, and I'm like, I saw Twister, and I was like, cool. And you know, it's obvious that the book, the tree is one of the feature trees in the book. And I'm flipping through and I'm just reading all the names, trying to see what other people went. Because I know Eric Weigert sewed his bougainvillea. And I remember that tree was so... That tree won an award. In fact, Bill said it was so incredible that he made the best tropical award for that tree. Like, it didn't exist before that.
That's right.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, there's some other people in there that have had some really, you know, really awesome trees, and there's names in there that you wouldn't even guess were in there. And I was flipping through and I was like, this is a really awesome hackberries. What was the, it was a
Celtis lavigata.
It's just the Celtis lavigata, because Celtis lavigata has a couple of different forms where it's got the really corky bark, and sometimes it's really smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Depending on what the characteristic of the tree is, like its genetics can be altered slightly, kind of like some bald cypresses have a lot of knees and fluting, and some bald cypresses are very smooth.
That's so right.
It's just kind of a different variant of
seedling variations. And I mean, Celtis lavigata and Celtis occidentalis, they're so close, the average person really doesn't. It's more of a geographic thing, but they both still grow up and down the eastern seaboard all the way, you know?
Yeah, it's a very common deciduous tree, and especially in the southeast is where it's very predominant, just like
could
the bald
be known
cypress.
As a trash tree.
Exactly. They're all trash trees.
That's right.
A lot of North American trees that we use for bonsai are looked as
bonsai
trash trees.
And they're valuable.
Yep, exactly. So right. That's why I was trying to get a time frame on the hackberry too, because you said you used it for your first workshop with John, and you were not practicing bonsai professionally at that time, right, Guy?
Oh, no. It's just
you
a
were
hobby.
Still
a
hobbyist. Yeah. That's so, right. But that dates you back to, when did you start bonsai?
In 84.
In 84?
Yes.
And then Robert... Mm-hmm. For you, when did you start bonsai? I'm just trying to get a timeline on everything here.
Jesus, I was 10, so 1968.
Jeez.
That's
crazy.
Jeez, I was just 8 years old.
Yeah, no, I was 10, and I got dragged to the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. You know, I was a 10-year-old kid. It was the first nice day in springtime after, you know, a cold New Jersey winter. And the last thing I wanted to do was go to some stupid garden, particularly with, we went with my mom's friend, who I used to call Mountain Maggie, because she had this like March Simpson high hairdo on top of her head. So I used to call her Mountain Maggie because she had a mountain on top of her head.
Trying to
and her
10-year-old
daughter.
The beehive.
I think that's what it's called, the beehive.
Yeah.
And she had a 10-year-old daughter named Candy, who, you know, I was a 10-year-old kid, so... Girls were not anything interesting to me at the time. I just couldn't stand her, and I did not go to a garden with.
Isn't amazing how things change?
And yeah, while we were there, we were eating lunch, and I finished my lunch, and my mom was aggravated with me because I was crying and wanted to leave. So she told me, "Go over there in the little room and look at the trees, and then we'll leave." And the first tree I saw in there was this little 12-inch tall Sergeant Juniper, and the sign said that it was 250 years old and it was from Japan, and that just blew me away.
Uh-huh.
I was amazed that something could be that small, and you know what junipers look like. They're half of it was dead, and
right.
I was like, whoa, I couldn't believe it. It just fascinated me. I would cut school. We lived in New Jersey. I would take a bus from my house down to North New Jersey, and then take the PATH train from North to Manhattan, and then a subway to Brooklyn, and wow. Plug these guys. Teach me how to do this. Teach me how to do this. And Mr. Okamura eventually just said, well, come on. And he kind of taught me how to do it.
Wow, the real Karate Kid story.
You know, and I've been obsessed ever since. But
hey, yeah. I consider myself one of the Karate Kids, as John Naka was Mr.
Mr. Miyagi, you know?
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi. And I mean, John didn't teach us how to fight. He taught us how to fight a different battle. And that's the just living in harmony with Mother Nature and the bonsai trees. Hey, so did Karate Kid come out before 84? Because I could say that I've been doing bonsai before I did in 84 if the Karate Kid came out earlier. Because that was
sure
my.
I'm not sure when that came out. But I do know it was by far, other than COVID, the biggest thing that made people know what bonsai is. interested in bonsai.
I like that. I like how that COVID inspired a lot of modern bonsai practitioners today.
Well, you know, it really
it did explode. I
mean, COVID was like a real shot in the arm for bonsai.
Mm-hmm. It was. Go ahead.
Stay at home hobby. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, people were looking for stuff, and, you know, bonsai was one of the things they found. And it, coinciding with COVID, was, you know, a lot of clubs, in order to stay alive, embraced the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, so you could say, I can't go out because I got to take care of my bonsai trees.
So it kind of, you know, it was like this perfect storm to help bonsai become even more popular. People were stuck at home looking for something to do. Clubs and other practitioners were using the internet to try to, like, you know, keep the clubs alive and keep the interest going, and people became more interested. And, you know, the huge shot in the arm. My best years ever in the nursery business, the bonsai nursery business, were 2020 and 2021.
Well, let's not hope for another pandemic, but I'm rooting for you.
No, but
I'm playing.
But, you know, and there's been some fall off. You know, a lot of people, and, you know, this happens all the time. People get interested. They realize it takes a lot of time, and, you know, there's a lot of commitment. They lose interest.
Then COVID goes away.
And everybody's in a different state of mind again.
Hey, I'm in a different state of mind.
Exactly. But a lot of those people stuck with it, though.
Yeah,
which
sure.
is a good thing, you know?
Absolutely.
There are people now that are, you know, that started during COVID that are really getting serious.
Once you get El a taste Nido. Of success, you're hooked, you know?
El Nido from Chicago has been, like, studying with Bjorn, studied, I think, a couple times with Ryan, did workshops with Ryan, did a lot of work with Morrow. And, you know, she just got interested in during COVID, and she's teaching now. Where, in fact, we're bringing her out to California next month. Be our visiting artist.
Yeah,
you know, she's, you know, a COVID bonsai baby, but she's really kind of, you know, it's amazing where she's gone from 2020, starting knowing nothing about bonsai, to where she's at today.
Mm-hmm. Some people, the learning curve is very steep when you have good teachers, you know?
And, you know, for some people, that obsession helps. You know,
sure.
Definitely, you know, I'm sure both of you agree. It's definitely an obsession. I mean, beat the hell out of crack cocaine and hookers, but, you know,
it's definitely a disease. I don't know about the latter part, but
we won't go there. Let's keep this family friendly.
That's right.
I mean, I can always mark podcast episodes as slightly explicit, you know, as far as the content goes. I mean, we're talking to two guys here that lived through the 70s and the 80s here, for crying out loud. So
free love. Well,
the 80s, I don't remember too much.
Yeah.
Peace.
Yeah. So for reference, The Karate Kid was 1984.
Oh, that's it's a coincidence then.
It's
not. No, because
is the Karate Kid.
No, I'm one of them. In 84 is when I had my first son too, and I moved into we moved into a tiny one bedroom apartment, and a guy below us had a couple trees, and I was immediately addicted, and then the Karate Kid came out. So that's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Karate Kid.
And it was in theaters, and no one will remember that because, I mean, going to the movies was a lot bigger of a deal to you guys back in the day.
Well, we had the drive-in.
The drive? Wow. I wish. There's only a few in existence. I'm sure in California they're a little bit more common, but there's not a single one over here.
It was fun times.
No, they were. The last drive-in that I can remember, in fact, the last time I was at a drive-in, remember when... O.J. Simpson did that whole thing with the chase, and the low speed chase in the Bronco.
How could I forget? Yeah,
my first wife and I went to a drive-in to watch that movie with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves and the school bus. I forget what it was called.
Oh, was it Speed?
Speed. Yes.
Speed, yes. we were watching that movie and listening to the radio
about
the O.J. Simpson chase at the same time. That's the last time that drive-in closed. Shortly after that. So it's been a long time since there's been a drive-in here. Wow.
But yeah, this is back when movies made a huge impression on the general audience, like pop culture and stuff. So yeah, I mean,
incorrigible.
Yeah. And we joke a lot that that the juniper, like especially the twisted juniper, like the little tiny tchotchke kind of feeling tree is the Mr. Miyagi tree here. And from my understanding, you guys said that that John Naka was Mr. Miyagi. I've heard a couple of things where it was like an amalgamation or whatever the word, I forgot the word that I was trying to say, but it's like a meshing up of John Naka, Ben Oki, and Roy Nakatoshi.
Yeah. Yes. He certainly Nagatoshi. Was. That's where the character Mr. Miyagi came from.
I think Roy Nakatoshi actually donated a few of his trees to the
That's
set.
Right.
Okay. That's what I heard.
His tree was actually, one of the trees.
It was Roy's dad.
Roy's dad spawns
it. It was
okay.
Roy's dad's tree.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The more you know about those things,
the more you want to know.
So and he has one. There was the one that they threw off the cliff. I think that might have been in the second movie.
He still got it.
Love that scene.
Yes,
it
indeed.
Was part of the junipers where they threw it off the cliff. Was a fake tree.
Wait,
no, that was a fake tree.
Roy still has that.
Well, I thought somebody broke the tree in half. They split the tree, and then
there was one
they planted it on the mountain.
That. Yeah, the bullies split the tree in half.
Okay, that's what it was.
He was getting bullied in the second movie. Well, he has
he still has that at his tree.
Yeah. Wow, that's too cool.
And from what I'm gathering, Mr. Roy Tokunashi is still alive. I don't know where he's located.
Yeah, Roy's...
Roy Nakatoshi?
Nakatoshi. I get the names mixed up.
Yeah, Roy Nakatoshi.
Yeah.
Yeah, he owns Fuji Bonsai Nursery somewhere.
Yeah, he specializes in those little shimpaku grafts.
Yeah, his I used to take classes with his dad, and you know, he really wants to graft Kishu shimpaku to California junipers all the time.
Can't blame him.
He's got hundreds of them. I never liked that because Kishu has, you know, this beautiful cloud-like foliage, and most of the Californias that we collect have 90% dead wood.
Yeah, well, I like the California foliage too, though.
Right, and so do I. But he was always the thing on grafting Kishu to it. So I went to class one day, and he wanted to approach graft with Kishu, and I said no. I don't want to do that. I want to keep it like this. And he got mad at me, and he's like, and he just ignored me the rest of the class.
I know he specialized in...
You don't know those guys.
He used to like put little San Jose junipers, too. Squamata.
Mm-hmm. That was mostly... Ishii.
That's who I'm thinking about.
Boss Ishii was famous for his grafting techniques. I mean, like, he would put 30, 40, 50 grafts on a tree and replace every branch. And a few years later, you could not tell where the grafts were. And his son Gary is damn near just as good as Boss was. I don't think he's as prolific. But yeah, some of those Ishii junipers, he loved to do it on San Jose's because they grow so fast.
Right. Yep.
So
he had,
you know,
immediate
you
success.
Those scion grafts on them, and within a couple of years, you have a nice little tree.
Right. Yeah. I loved them. I thought they were fantastic.
Roy Nakatoshi is famous for approach grafting Kishu to California.
I wonder what the...
What's that?
What's the benefit of approach instead of sticking a scion?
I think it's more successful if you're not that good of a grafter.
Maybe so.
It's easier to become successful, and you also get more, because what they would do is take
you could hold a little branch on there
and approach it. You know, approach graft it to the bottom of a primary branch, and you know once it took and you separated, you had all your secondary and sometimes even tertiary branching all at one time.
Copy that.
So it's kind of but you always could tell where the graft was.
Yeah, because it has a little reverse there.
Right. Yeah, and you could always tell. Huh. And with the difference between Masaishi's Scion grafts, where after a few years, there was no telling at all.
No sign. Yeah, that's why I was asking. I was just curious
where the tree was grafted. And it took a little bit longer, but not much longer.
You had to be more precise and try to have two cambiums line up. You know what I'm saying? So that
right. And the timing was more important.
Yes, exactly. You know,
the approach crafts you can pretty much do anytime.
Right, right, right. You don't have to have your scion dormant and your rootstock growing. Yep.
So, I was never a fan of that because the California juniper, to me, the deadwood in the trunk doesn't coincide with that fine, lush cloud-like foliage.
And
so that, something that
it's a little too rough of a texture and the bark and the deadwood. Just go.
It just always looks. People do it. They do it in Japan. They take these rough, coarse foliage junipers and put kishu on with all the deadwood. It just to me, it just looks weird. Having that kind of lush foliage with that kind of deadwood.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai and, of course, The Little Things. And we want to just let you know that we have a scholarship fund for bonsai education that's going to be supplied by The Little Things ourselves as well as Joshua Rath Tools. John said he is excited about the scholarship and that he wanted to do his own contribution as well. John will be contributing $200 worth of Joshua Roth tools to the scholarship fund as well. So in addition to being able to go to a local bonsai establishment, either it be a bonsai nursery or a bonsai professional, and seek training or classes through them, Joshua Roth will also send you a nice beginner set of $200 worth of tools to fit your needs for your bonsai goals and dreams.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just want to tell you guys about Say Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also, the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out, and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
Certainly it has its application, but I always have appreciated the coarseness of the California juniper, just something about That it's and for anybody, I mean, Kishu is very dense, and the California juniper is open, a little more airy. That is, it makes it more resistant to fungus and pest and disease. And I think it's airiness of it. The whole,
I think it just with the in combination with the deadwood of the trunk, it's much more natural look for me. Yep,
like red beans and rice.
The truth be told, if you collect female California junipers and you spend a few years, you know, pinching and trimming correctly, it's not all that coarse. They kind of respond pretty well, but still stays a little bit, you know, much more open and airier than Kishu does.
Yeah, I like that look. Yep. You have a bounty of wonderful material right there in your backyard.
And now, literally, almost right in my backyard. Yeah, you know, I moved from the. I used to live kind of right in the city, right in the valley, and I moved to the outskirts of northern LA County now, in kind of a more, much more rural area. And you know, within a mile of my house, there's some really nice junipers.
Oh, wow, you're so fortunate. It's always bonsai envy, because I wish I could grow a Rocky Mountain juniper or a California juniper or some of the others. However, I think it's sometimes we have material that other people can't grow, and it's always reversed, you know.
You wish
could grow it, but hey, you just got to accept what you can grow and grow to the best of your ability, and you'll find it's just as satisfying.
And it's like, you know, zone envy. I love hemlock.
That's what it is.
Mountain hemlocks, particularly.
And Doug fir. But I can't grow them here.
Yep.
You know, it just doesn't get cold enough.
Right, right.
So, and, you know, I spent years fighting that and finally gave up on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that always amazed me about bald cypresses, though, was how adaptable they are.
Yes.
I mean, you could literally take a tree out of a swamp in Louisiana, put it in a box, mail it to California, plant it, and it doesn't skip a beat.
Doesn't skip a beat.
Yep.
I wish she worked in the reverse, where you could ship me a California juniper, put it in a box, ship it to it doesn't skip a beat.
Yeah, unfortunately, that doesn't really work. And I don't think the Californians can take that kind of humidity that you guys have.
No, absolutely not.
But,
I do know some that are in Atlanta, right outside of Atlanta, that have been doing fine for 5 or 6 years now.
There is a new juniper, collected juniper material that is kind of turning the page for us on having that type of material here in Louisiana, is the 1C juniper. Bird does really good in high humidity environments.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's interesting, because a lot of them come from Arizona.
Yeah, And I haven't been able to get my hands on one yet, but I've heard people down in Florida have some, and they're doing really well.
That's odd. I think 5 years might be the limit. I would be more
you want to see in 5 years how that goes, huh?
6 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did Kenji move? I think Kenji Miata moved from California in... I can't remember when he moved. It was, you know what? It's been more than 5 years, because he moved long before COVID. He moved like maybe to 2018 or something like that. So he's been, you know, 6, maybe going on 7 years with California, is right outside of Atlanta.
Wow. Well, so, he's embarking upon the limitations that we'll see. I would like to think he could do it, because at one time I grew several, like a bunch of Rocky Mountain junipers, and they did well. They even did well in Florida, South Florida. But that's a totally different situation. It's not a desert. Nonetheless, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't invest into those kind of trees for me.
Well, I certainly wouldn't, you know, get any expensive one. I would maybe experiment with some kind of mediocre ones, maybe.
Sure.
But you know, like anything in bonsai is long term. So, you know, it's funny. You know, people are like, well, I've had it for a year. Well, a year doesn't mean shit.
No, doesn't mean jack.
I moved from New Jersey to eventually. I moved from New Jersey to Los Angeles and brought, you know, like hemlocks and Doug firs and stuff with me. And it took 3 years. I mean, my launches a month later. I moved in September. It was like 110 degrees the day I moved. The launches didn't even make it out of the truck. Yeah, they died. But it took about three years for the rest of them to finally give up the ghost. But you could tell right away, you know, that first spring that they were just not happy.
Yep, like a fish out of water. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And now, so, certainly, you know, look, if you had the resources, I could take a Sierra juniper or a California juniper and given the right, I could have a cooler that would lower the humidity and maintain the chill hours that's necessary to successfully grow it in the right humidity. But that's inexorable expenses. And I have nothing.
Well, it is, and it doesn't really work. I actually bought a walk-in refrigerator from a liquor store.
There you go. Cool.
I bought a big walk-in refrigerator from a liquor store that was going out of business. And, you know, I was able to keep the trees for 3 years after the third year, you know, and they just got weaker and weaker. I think part of it is for us, it gets so damn hot in the summertime that the trees just are literally going 24/7 just trying to keep cool. They don't get a break at all.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It could be 100-105 during the day. And at night, maybe if we were lucky, it would get down to 85 or 90. So the trees are still, you know, pushing water through them and transpiring just to stay cool enough.
Well, forget about the bonsai envy.
Of no winter.
Yeah. Stick to what works.
You know,
that's a good experiment, though. Now you just convinced me not to try.
Well, hey, look at it this way. I just saved you a couple thousand dollars.
Thank you.
on a refrigerator, much less the trees.
Well, yes, indeed.
Hey, you know, last time I saw you, I was in Louisiana visiting with my wife. We were on vacation. And you had a planting of a bunch of bald cypresses on a piece of sinker cypress.
And were they small? Were they like little?
Yeah, they were small.
Yeah, they were like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 year old seedlings.
No, they were fine as shit. But the problem is that wood doesn't last. You might get 5 or 6, 10 years out of it. In fact, I remember you kind of on a quest. Now that I recall.
That's where I was heading with this. Yeah. I got a bunch of pieces, and I went to a FedEx store somewhere in Louisiana, and I bailed back. I got these boxes that they had for golf clubs, so they were kind of long and big, and I bailed back like 15 or 20 of these pieces of wood, and I made bunch of those things. I got a bunch of little bald cypress seedlings and put them together. They looked really cool. I couldn't keep them in the nursery.
Were fun. So you remember the like 6 foot long one I had that had two.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was fun. But when it started rooting through the wood and then rooting, to the bench it was sitting on.
Oh, Jesus.
And then I started moving it. And I was like, man, every time I move it, I'm breaking it into 3/4 now. It's getting. And so, yeah. But no, that was fun, and it was a good time, and I made several of those and sold a bunch of them, but they don't last. Now, if you can make a nice log or something, cement or chicken wire.
Yeah, I was hoping that the sinker cypress, because it was, you know, on the water for so many years, that it would work. I haven't been able to keep one for long enough for it to start rotting.
Well, yeah, because sinker cypress is protected from all the microbes, you know, deprive a lot of oxygen. It's just, yeah. No, but still, I wouldn't discourage anybody from, if they find they have got some seedlings hanging around, tridents or any tree for that matter, and they've got some wood, do it. It's fun. It gets them established. And your tree rots away, the pot rots away, you're ready for a real pot.
So, but yeah, it was fun. It was inspiring. So I still have a couple of those pieces of wood that I mailed back to myself.
Yeah, because I recall.
My wife thought I was nuts.
Yeah, at that time when I first did that, I was overzealous, and somebody seduced me into buying a whole bus of Sinker Cypress and all that wood. I had a pile of it, you know, and it didn't last long. I mean, people put orchids and stuff on it, but still I had a bunch of it. And because I thought I was going to put everything on a piece of driftwood. Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, it was definitely fun.
Evan has some bad ass cypress forests on wood. I mean, fun. I never made them this big. Those are big. They're fun.
That's what I was actually going to allude to, is that I did do a bald cypress forest on a piece of wood, and it was a big one. It was like 13 trees, and they were not small. I mean, number one tree was about, I would say, 6 inches across, and then
wow,
and it's about 4 feet tall, roughly. And I was like, okay, this is doing pretty well. It was on a really long piece of sinker cypress, piece of wood or whatever. And yeah, you say that I still have that, but actually what you mentioned about it breaking apart, me and Salvador, my grounds foreman over here, we went to move it last year and it broke in half. That forest now lives in a big landscape pot. And everything else now that I do like that, I'm just putting them on stones that are cut by Bill Butler now.
Yeah, good deal. Those don't rot away.
Yeah, the stone will rot.
But they're beautiful. A lot heavier to move.
Yes, yes. And I will tell you, it's funny. I can't believe how small the bonsai world feels, because when you said that you had seen that that planting on that piece of deadwood, and you were like, yeah, you did this one planting, and I remembered it specifically. It was like a switchback. It went up and it zigzagged up, and it had all the little cypress trees.
Oh, you remember that one?
I walked in there and I saw you the day you had made it.
Oh no shit!
And
yes,
you were so proud of it. I was like, this is cool, guy. And then that inspired me to go make my forest.
Nice.
It's sweet. So funny how that works, you know. But yeah, that's really awesome to know that all this stuff is happening at the same time, you know.
World gets smaller and smaller, like you said.
It's wild.
It really is a small world, you know.
Well, especially and bonsai's growing. Hey, on that note, small world. I just got a note yesterday. Nothing's firmed up yet, but Mike James, I believe, the curator of the National Bonsai Foundation and Pingjing Museum, he invited me to come out to restyle my tree that's in the John Knockle Pavilion. And that is going to be on, I think it's May 11th through the 9th through the 11th, but it's called International Bonsai Day. Do you know anything about that?
I think that's been around
the
for
World
a minute.
Bonsai Day. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's World Bonsai Day. That's what it is.
Right. But, yeah, it's sometime in April or May every year.
It's
in
May.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. And for reference, like Robert, I'm showing you the magazine cover. This is the tree back in 2001. This is the tree at that, and this is going to be on our Instagram page as well if you guys want to go check it out for the listeners.
That's the one that's in the National Bonsai Museum now.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. It looks way different now. I saw a picture of it. Guy showed me all grown out. Yeah.
I asked them to not prune it, and so they let it grow unchecked this entire year, the whole growing season. And so
cool.
I'm going to get to be able to have my way with it. I'm excited about it. Yeah, I was just wondering about World Bonsai Day, what that actually is.
That's something that I haven't really heard
about. I've never celebrated it. I celebrate World Bonsai Day every day.
It was something that I forget when it started, but
new.
That Saburo Tado and John Naka kind of started back. Probably in the 80s, late 80s, maybe.
Okay, so it's not new. It's older.
No, it's not new. It's been around for a while.
Yeah. It says that it's supposed to be May 8th.
Okay, that sounds about right. The year of COVID, 2020, California Bonsai Society, we did nobody had meetings. Nobody was doing shows or exhibits or anything. And I decided that we were going to try to do an online exhibition.
I know.
And I invited people from all over the world because, you know, everybody was like not being able to do shows and stuff. And it was kind of a last minute thing. I think I started doing this like a week before World Bonsai Day. And we had like 300 trees submitted.
Wow. That was a success.
It's still up on Facebook. If you
I'll check that out.
I think it's a California Bonsai Society World Bonsai Day exhibition or something. But it's still up on Facebook. But people from all over the world submitted trees. It was kind of cool. I think part of the reason was somehow or another word got out amongst the professionals that there was going to be a cash prize. So a lot of European professionals were submitting trees.
Well, I didn't hear that. I would have joined you if that's the case.
There was never any intention of having a cash prize. But I think that for whatever reason, some people thought there were. So we got more participation than we thought we were going to. But it's an awesome world we live in, frankly.
Yes, it is. It is. I agree.
And correction on the date for International Day of Bonsai. It's actually, it says it's the second Saturday of May each year. So it just so happens to fall on that day. So yeah, I looked
Roger
it up.
Roger that.
So,
cool.
So if that's accurate to the thing being invited up to the DC collection of work, then that would be, let's see, be the 10th. The stat Saturday.
So I believe it was the 9th through the 11th.
Yep, that would be it. Yep, and that's pretty convenient. So we'll talk about that later on.
Yep. I had to squeeze that in.
Yep. No, that's really cool though. That is a very cool thing because
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just two trees that I haven't seen for a long time, and we're talking about Twisters, so I brought that up.
Yep.
Isn't it cool though when you get the opportunity to see a tree that you know you've had and worked on for a while, and then you don't see it for a while, and then you see again?
Well, sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it could be good.
Yeah. You're right. Sometimes it's like, huh, shit, what the fuck did you do? I remember just recently I saw a juniper that I sold to somebody that originally was one of the trees that I was not going to sell. You know, I'm just sorry, this tree is not for sale. People made offers.
That's the only tree they'll want then.
And then, you know, I needed a truck and somebody wanted to buy the tree. So I sold the tree and bought a truck.
Nice.
But then I got to see the tree again just recently after 3 or 4 years. And I was like, wow, they did a really good job with this. And, you know, they saw something that I didn't see. I had the tree for 20 years. And the reason I actually sold it, besides needing a truck, was the fact that I was kind of done. You know, I couldn't.
Sure,
I didn't feel
there
was anything more I could do I wasn't even tired of it. I just couldn't make it any better. You know, I didn't see anything more in it. But this person did. And now, you know, the tree is to another level.
Maybe
and
he'll trade
like
you
really
the tree
cool.
for the truck.
You know, it's like, hey. I need the truck more than I need the tree.
Cool.
And I'm sorry, with the price of trucks nowadays, I don't want a truck payment.
Yeah, I can't blame you, nor do I. But unfortunately got one.
I'm gonna look into ask a few people that I know if maybe there's a possibility of finding out actually what is going on with Twister right now, maybe even getting a curve or something. I don't know how successful, and I know the guy that bought it is super private.
Right.
But
hey, just to find out
I know a few people
well.
That might know some. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, see what I can find out.
Yeah. Cool. That's the next
puzzle. No promises, but I think it would be cool. It would be cool to kind of, you know that it's still doing good. Maybe even get a picture of it if possible.
No, because you actually, you sent me a picture of it. I can't find it. You texted me a picture. And I assume it's even bigger than it was before. Anytime this much time goes by, particularly with bald cypress, they take on a different size. They become these giant trees, these imperial-sized trees, I like to say.
Yeah, well, that was already an imperial-sized tree.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
I needed to use the height. I needed to use a hoist and a, you know, a 10-inch limb from an oak tree to repot the tank.
So for reference, because we circled back around to Twister, and we were talking about when it was repotted. So I remember I talked to you about this a little bit, Robert, about when you did that. Do you remember when you repotted the tree?
Oh God, you're gonna ask me years? No.
I mean, just a rough estimate.
2017, 2018, maybe.
Maybe around that time.
Maybe 2017.
Yeah. So
might have been about 2017, something like that.
That must have been right before you liquidated the collection.
It was like the year before.
Year before, cool.
Okay. I think that I liquidated that collection in 2018, I think.
Do
or
you
maybe
remember
it was 2019?
Do you remember the size pot that it went into, like, overall?
Well, I put it in a 48-inch by 48-inch box that we made.
Okay.
We made a big box for it out of cedar fencing. And it was in a, I'm going to guess, a 36-inch, maybe even a 38 or 40-inch.
It was
big,
a 40-inch
Chinese.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And for comparison, there are pictures online of Guy standing next to it. And Guy, you're about roughly 6'4", I think.
Oh, I'm like 6'1".
6'1"? I thought you were a little bit taller than that.
Maybe. I haven't measured myself lately.
Okay. So let's say you're 6'1".
Probably
one.
Shorter than you used to be.
Fuck you.
But the tree itself, you're taller than Twister, aren't you?
Unless I recall, I was, or if he was sitting on the ground.
Roughly, from ground up. So yeah, it was about
6'1". I'm definitely taller than Twister. Sure.
Okay.
So yeah, from soil level.
It was probably close to 6 feet tall, 5.5, 6 feet tall.
Damn. Yeah. Because when you sent me a picture.
Big tree.
It's a beast. It's invested from what I saw that last picture. I'd love to see a current one. So I hope you can do everything in your power to hook us up with a more recent picture. But the last picture that I got when we were talking about finding Twister, he had like invested into a whole, like you putting that tree in that big box facilitated the amount of wounds.
Oh yeah,
it amazing.
Just went crazy.
Shit, yeah.
So the last correspondence that you've had with the guy that owns Twister, do you remember that?
I actually never had any correspondence with the guy that owns it. It was the elf that facilitated that.
Okay.
There was like four or five of us that took care of the collection of trees.
Okay.
That was another one of the people that was working on the collection that facilitated that sale.
All right.
But,
so let's say you haven't really heard anything
world,
since.
Small world.
Yeah, so you haven't really heard anything since 2018, then. Yeah.
Right.
Since 2000
and
when?
I think 2018, maybe 2019. Yeah. But I think that if the tree had died, there would have been word in the Southern California bonsai community.
Copy that. I would have hoped so.
Yeah, I would think so.
Some people are more private, though.
Yeah, I mean, and this guy certainly is private, but there are professionals that take care of his trees. It's even possible that they had signed non-disclosure agreements or something. But I think if the tree was dead, word would have gotten out.
Right. Well, then that's good. Then I'm just gonna go on with the feeling that it's fine. It's doing great. And
I would assume that that's a safe assumption.
And
I would think that, that's a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah.
And the hackberry, if I remember correctly, that got donated to the Huntington's.
Oh.
So I should be able to get photos of that.
That would be super cool. Shit. I think they also got a cherry of the Rio Grande.
I'm not 100% sure. Yes, they did. That talk about a big mother effer. That tree,
it's
we
heavy.
Repotted that tree, and four of us were carrying it. It's really heavy. Four of us were carrying it down the stairs on a stretcher made out of 2x4s. As a 2x4 broke.
Jesus. What?
And one of my guys somehow or another got his knee and one arm under the edge of the pot just before it hit the ground and held that sucker up.
Wow, that's passion. Now, that's passion. Tell him,
but
kudos,
yeah, I mean,
thank you.
He saved that tree. That was a heavy mother effer.
Wow,
boy.
Yeah, I remember it was heavy. Even when it was bare rooted, it was heavy. Just dense ass wood.
Oh yeah, I mean, just the trunk of the tree. That was a heavy tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a yes. Couple major branches had died, so we did a repotting and a major restyling. And
sweet.
I'm pretty sure. I think that one went to Huntington too, but I'll talk to Ted. Ted Matson.
That's right. Ted Matson's the curator, right?
He's the curator there, so I'll give him a call over the weekend.
Nice.
And if those trees are there, sometime in the next week or so, I'll make it a point to get over there and get some photos.
That would be so cool. I'd love to get reacquainted with that darn hackberry.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So,
yeah, and I'm looking online real quick to see if there's any photos that might show us anything of the hackberry. See if it's like in a collection photo or anything.
It would be in the Chinese. I'm pretty sure it's in the Penjing collection.
Mm. That's in Huntington. And where's the Huntington collection located at?
In Pasadena. Well, actually, it's Altadena.
Yeah,
but Pasadena. It's the Huntington. Huntington Library Gardens and Art Museum.
I'm seeing a lot of photos.
Funny,
you know, go ahead.
The Huntington used to be known more for their library and art collection, and the gardens were kind of just the redheaded stepchild. And over the last couple decades, that has kind of changed around, and now the Huntington is incredibly popular as a botanical garden, and the bulk collection is incredibly popular, and the library and the art collection has kind of fallen to the wayside a little bit.
Back becomes
funny. Yep, exactly. There you go.
There is a if you look up the Huntington Bonsai Collection, there is a bald cypress on there that's featured several times. Do you guys know what the origin of that one is?
Gee,
I don't know.
Hey, Robert, I think I sold y'all.
It's very possible that that was one of Guy's trees, too. I know he bought, you know, a good number of trees from you, and he had some, besides Twister, he had several pretty big.
I would recognize them.
Bald cypresses.
It looks like almost it either could be Guy, and it also looks fairly similar to like a Gary Marcel.
That's what I was gonna say. If it's not from Guy, it's possible that it was one of Gary Marcel's trees.
Yeah, we have a Gary Marcel tree here, and it looks structurally like something that he would have collected.
Gary spent quite a bit of time here in California. He was good friends with Malaketa.
That's right.
And Mel would go out there and they'd go collecting and ship trees back, and then Gary would come and do workshops on some of those trees. So it's possible it's one of his, but it's also possible it's one of Guy's.
Well, I would know, so yeah, it doesn't matter. So Gary was one of my good students.
Yeah. Look at the picture.
I don't see it.
Evan has it.
I have it. He's in a different part of the nursery building. I can show it to him later. Kind of evaluate that. But I mean, like, anytime that I see a big bald cypress, I always assume that it came from, you know, the southeast range over here. That's just me making an assumption. Yeah.
Well, it's probably a pretty good assumption because, you know, I mean, it's either there or Florida.
That's
and
right.
For the most part, my experience with cypresses from Florida is that most of them were swamp cypresses, not bald cypresses.
They're pond ascendants.
Mm-hmm. Pond cypress, right. And almost every single one I've ever seen that's come from Florida has had root mealybugs.
Yep.
That's
It was something you could deal with. You know, you give it a good soaking in malathione, and you know, but I don't think I can't recall ever seeing a pond cypress from Florida
that did not have
root mealybugs.
I never have.
It's funny. It's funny because like that is, you guys are saying that, and apart from this episode, that is something that we talk about on a regular. But anytime that bald cypress comes up on this show, we always allude to the root mealybug issue and the confusion.
You can't see them above.
The confusion with mycorrhiza is always the big
thing.
How
about this? So 30 years ago, nobody in Florida could keep a bald cypress alive. And Mary Madison and Mary Miller one time, they were saying, "Guy, every time we repot these trees, we take the mycorrhiza and put it into the new potting soil. We're re-inoculating them." And when they told me this, I said, "Well, there you have it. We just solved the age-old riddle that they weren't killing. They were reintroducing mealybugs, root mealybugs to the new potting." And once they stop that, and it's a simple fix, I don't know, there's all kind of root trenches, but ornithine acetate is perfect for them. It stinks, but if you do it twice in a month, you can have that eradicated and your trees turn around immediately.
Right. But yeah, that's funny.
So where we're at currently, so kind of going back to the main topic is on Twister, we need to see if, Robert, if you can kind of do some poking around and see if we can get a current photo of it. We know as of right now, this is literally like a Bigfoot thing. It's like looking for Bigfoot now, where we're just kind of like, if we can get the photo, we can believe, you know. And based off what we know about bald cypress, they're very, very resilient trees. So considering its care and the person that you know it went to recently, they take really good care of bonsai. And so it should be healthy. If we get a current photo, it'll be like one of those like break the internet moments, I think. You know, like as far as like if we had a chronological order of Twister's history, we could do a whole thing and be like, here it is now. But it depends on the owner of the tree, if they want us to even share that information. That's another
challenge. If you do that, I'll quit drinking and I'll go to church every Sunday for the rest of my life.
Oh God, that's a big one.
Don't make
fun. Okay, well, okay, well, well, yeah, see what you can do. I'm sorry,
yeah,
God.
Let's just leave it at that. I'll try my best.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, don't hold me to any of that.
I'll try my best. I don't want to deprive you of that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Let me off the hook easily.
And so we will. We will look for a picture of Twister, and I think we can get a picture of the hackberry much easier from if it's at the Huntington collection, like you said.
I'm pretty sure we get a picture of the hackberry and maybe even the cherry of the Rio Grande easily. I'll call Ben today.
That cherry of the Rio Grande came from the Kennedy Estate in Florida.
Right, I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, they all have a story.
Yeah, they sure do.
So, but yeah, this is awesome. I'm glad we can get some more information on these trees, on history of both Guy and also Robert here, as far as you guys' influences on the bonsai scene and our current bonsai world. So, yeah, we're hoping for the best on, you know, seeing if we can get pictures of Twister. We can definitely get more reliable pictures on the hackberry, like we said, and the Rio Grande.
Cherry of the Rio Grande.
Cherry of the Rio Grande.
It's a Eugenia.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something I want to touch base on that you mentioned at the beginning of this thing about one of your sponsors, Josh from Joshua Rock.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm so glad to hear that you guys are doing a scholarship. And I think it's so important to encourage people to like actually, you know, be able to study a little bit more seriously.
Yeah.
You know, we give away two $1,000 scholarships every year now, California Bonsai Society does. And over the last several years, I've noticed more and more clubs, like you guys are doing one. The Regals, Larry Regal, just recently passed. And they sold off his collection and Potts has put the money up for a scholarship fund where they're giving away, I think it's $2,500 scholarships every year.
Awesome.
And to me, that's one of the best things that people can do is to encourage other people to be able to study on a little bit more serious level.
Yep.
So hats off to John. John's an awesome guy. I love John. He's always, since he's taken over, before he met Joshua Roth, but since he's taken over Joshua Roth, he's always there to do whatever he can to support, you know, Bonsai and Bonsai education.
You know.
Stuff. But the more of that kind of stuff that goes on, I think it's awesome. So I'll use this opportunity to challenge every club president to this podcast.
There you go.
To put together a little scholarship to your club. Doesn't have to be that big. You know, it doesn't have to be a couple $1,000 a year. If you can afford it, great. But, you know, something. Let's kind of do what we can to encourage people to actually study and lift everybody up. Exactly. So that's my challenge to every Bonsai club president of theirs. Put together a scholarship fund.
Hey, my hat's off to Evan Perdue. He's exactly that person. He opens up his nursery to better the education of Bonsai, and he welcomes seasoned artists along with brand new Bonsai people. And he offers something unique. And I'm just going to brag on you a little bit, Evan, here.
Sure.
What Evan has done, Robert, I don't know if you know it, but Evan has actually erected like a ginormous greenhouse for the Greater New Orleans Bonsai Society for their personal projects, along with a section of field out here where they're field growing and getting expert advice from Evan and his staff. And they all come out here regularly. And I can already see just this connection, how the talent's just growing. These people are now growing faster in their bonsai experience, and they're addicted to it. And my hat's off to Evan, because when you come out here, Robert, you'd be amazed at the thousands and thousands of trees that are being grown professionally by an expert that offers not only contests and classes, but down to a very personal one-on-one situation. And so, yeah, you're right, Evan. It's amazing out here.
I really appreciate the kind words, awesome. Guy.
And that's something that we desperately need, is people growing material for bonsai.
And
so if I was wearing a hat, I would take it off to you too.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
And so, full disclosure on that too. Yes, we are a production nursery here in Louisiana. Shout out to Underhill, which I operate here. But yes, we support our local club, New Orleans, and the Baton Rouge Club too.
That's right. Let's forget that.
And so, being the only bonsai nursery in Louisiana, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's the best that we can do. And like mentioning with the sponsorships, I love that Robert's like, come on, everybody, let's get this together. Y'all know y'all can support beginners in this. And we're a podcast show. And I'm going to be honest here with this podcast show, little things, the budget on this show is very low. So the fact that I'm able to scrape together a couple $100 to make a scholarship for people, and I'm giving this to anyone in the, you know, international, I can organize this with any bonsai professional, wherever you're at. The fact that we can scrape this together, yeah, that's a challenge. Like, you guys have been called out. So if you're a bonsai president, if you're a bonsai society president, you're like, you're going to get the fire on your ass on this one. But, you know.
Let the games begin.
But yes, we definitely need more people like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but anyway, you guys feel pretty good about this. Y'all have any other closing remarks before we kind of close up on this episode?
It's just awesome to sit around and shoot the shit with you guys. And, you know, I haven't talked to a guy in a couple of years, so
it's been a minute.
He turned me down for coming in as a business
partner. Man, I'm sorry, but hey, if you ever have a change of feelings. And,
I understand.
It was
understand.
Bad timing.
Cool.
No.
I just had to throw a little dig in there. That's
cool. Whatever, bro.
But yeah, it's been a long time. I got to come out and see you.
Yes, it'd be a pleasure. And
yeah, I just talked to somebody yesterday. I'm probably going to buy, I have an opportunity. This guy has a 92 Harley Sportster 1200 with 3,000 miles on it.
Wow, brand new.
And the problem is he's in New York. And he's given it to me for almost nothing. I'm going to pay $3,000 for the bike. So I'm gonna buy it now and talk to my brother. I hope my brother doesn't hear it because I haven't talked to him yet. So my brother's been going and picking it up for me and bringing it to my mom in New Jersey because the bike's in Long Island. But then next spring, I'm going to drive it across country coming home.
There you go.
I'm just gonna take a couple sounds weeks like the and, adventure. You can't pass up us.
I the bike across.
Yep, bike across so, no, the entirety of the United States.
New Orleans is definitely be, you know, New Orleans is definitely going to be a stop on the way.
Do the do the Easy Rider, go do what they did in the movie where they swing down in New Orleans.
Yeah,
you and Guy, yeah, Easy Riders.
No, I'll be on the sidecar.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad
that could be trouble.
I'm really, really happy I could facilitate this. I know you and Guy go back. Y'all have a friendship and a history in Bonsai, and this is awesome to hear you guys talk and recollect about some of the history and the trees that you guys have had.
It's so fun to go down memory lane, Robert, Evan. Yeah.
Yeah. So
if you don't relive it, you forget about it.
Yep. So yep. So if you guys feel good, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here.
I'm forgetting shit so fast nowadays.
So I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up. If you guys are ready, I'll go ahead and list off some things that we always say at the end of our show, and then we'll say goodbye. You guys ready? You guys good?
I'm good.
Yeah.
All right.
We're good.
So yeah, as mentioned, our show is sponsored by our amazing patrons. I did fail to mention that we had a new patron named Draco. That's the name they provided here. So thank you, Draco, for subscribing. But all of our other Bonsai Buds, we always say their names at the end of the episode. So we're going to list off our Bonsai Best Buds. William Wallace Pottery. Wallace Woods Pottery. Sorry, I said that backwards. Bonsai Samurai, Reton Studio, Kyle Ford, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominguez, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Myrick Bonsai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Corforia, David J. Baccaccini, Gilbert Jorez, Sean Seaman, Various Bonsai, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crean, Victrina Ridgeway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, J.A.S. Potts, Bonsai Marine, A.C. Castle, Louis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Atkins, David N., Chase, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gariando, Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Auth, Montana Bridgman, and Mark Melty. Thank you guys so much for being sponsors of our show. And of course, we have Specimen Best Buds on Ryuin Bonsai Garden in Australia. We have a lot of Australian listeners and supporters, by the way. And then Bill Butler.
That's cool.
Bill Butler, Bill's Bayou. He is our Specimen Best Bud. He is the anchor of our show. If it wasn't for Bill, we wouldn't be on. No, I'm just kidding. Bill always wants me to specify how important he is. But
He is. I love Bill, and he's very important.
I'm leaning
You're
into
important,
it.
Bill.
I'm leaning into it because I know Guy is really familiar with Bill. He made sure that I said that. And of course, thank you,
And
Joshua
he makes
Roth.
Great soil, too.
Yes, he does.
And great bonsai.
Yes. And also our main show sponsor again. Thank you, John, with Joshua Roth. And what Robert said earlier about John, I'm sure it'll make you blush. But thank you so much, John, for supporting the show and helping us with the scholarship. And so some closing remarks. If you guys want to check out any more content from me, you can go over to underhillbonsai.com and see some articles that I wrote. You can go over to Underhill on YouTube and see some videos that I've made. Guy's on a few of those. So we're going to be doing some more of those in the future. We got some cool projects coming up we've talked about.
Yes, indeed.
And for Guy, you could just Google Guy Guidry on Google and you're going to get some stuff. I mean, there's plenty of old photos. This guy with like brown hair and stuff on there and long, shaggy.
I used to diet though.
But Guy doesn't have much of a social media presence, but there's definitely a lot of photos of him. He's done a lot of workshops and demonstrations and he's been a lot of places. So you guys can find some content there. But he will be doing some more stuff with Underhill. We'll do some videos and or articles in the future here.
Looking forward to it.
Yep.
Just ignore the post office pictures.
And then for
I am wanted.
And then for you, Robert, I know people can go over to Kamura Bonsai. Is there anything else that you would like people to know before we sign you off? Any shout outs?
KimuraBonsai.com is our website and Kimura Bonsai on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. You guys go over there and check out Robert's website, follow him on his social medias, and keep up to date. And maybe we'll get a picture of Twister. We'll probably get a photo of the Hackberry, but we will see.
Come on, Robert.
This is what we're here
for. We'll come through for us, bud.
But yeah, no pressure, but we'll see.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
All right.
But
Robert,
thank you guys.
It was a pleasure.
Yes.
Evan, a pleasure.
It certainly has been. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. And everybody who's listening, you guys have a great week. We'll see y'all on the next one.